So we see that in the more mundane and ordinary beings, we have this mind, which has this special quality of cognition, cognitive aspect of the mind. So this cognitive aspect of the mind is not something that we have to look for to get something new, but it's something already there primordially. So this potential of the mind to cognize something is not something newly derived. It is existent since beginningless time. So this clarity aspect on the cognitive aspect is there as long as there is the mind. So in terms of the negative states of the mind, like attachment and hatred, jealousy and so forth, they come about through gathering of their respective causes and conditions, and not that these mental states are something intrinsic or inherent a quality of the mind. So when we speak about the qualities of samsara, they all derive through ignorance. And this ignorance is not something congenitally existent, a quality of the mind. But rather, because by way of dependent origination, by way of dependence on the ignorance, that all the aspects of samsara come about. So, and then when we speak about the omniscient state of the mind, so that is the mind which perceives everything that exists in the universe, in the entire samsara. So this very basic quality of the clarity and the cognition that is present in the ordinary sentient beings, through the development of that, then that ordinary mind can be improved or intensified or transformed to the state of the omniscience. So the fully blossomed state of the omniscient state is not something derived newly by the Buddha, but the very seed of it is right there intact, congenitally with the mind of the ordinary beings, sentient beings. And so the reasoning behind all these concepts is that the virtuous minds, that they have a valid cognition or valid mind as the basis, and whereas the non-virtuous, the mental states, they don't possess the valid basis. And moreover, all those non-virtuous mind or the distorted state of mind, and their apprehension of things is bearing a contradiction to the reality of the existence or the universe. And whereas the virtuous or the positive states of mind, they rightly accord the object that they apprehend accords with the reality. As such, that can be promoted infinitely, and the negative states of mind can be undermined rightly. So this innately existing clarity and the cognitive aspect of the mind is something congenially existent, and whereas the aspect of the ignorance and all these things, the distorted states of mind, they are something adventitious or temporary. They can be averted, they can be abandoned altogether. So how can one think that these negative or distorted states of minds can be eradicated? So that is because we see that they are all rooted to ignorance. And this ignorance, if you reflect well, we see that the disparity but in the way things really exist and the way things are apprehended by this ignorance. So we see that in the world of reality, the things function by way of the law of dependent origination. So it is because that everything comes about by way of dependent origination, by way of dependence on their various causes, that things can be possibly posited as existing. And whereas the mode of existence, the as apprehended by ignorance, is something so solid, something so fixated, concrete and independent, a mode. So if we explore into the reality, we see that there is no independent reality, because everything exists by way of dependence on some other factors. So this absence of the intrinsicality or inherency or the independent mode is what we call as the emptiness of things and events. So when you speak about the truth body of the Buddha, so that is actually the quality of the state which is deprived or a state of cessation of those advantageous, negative or deluded state of the mind. So here we see the disparity between the reality and the way things are apprehended by ignorance. So in reality, all things are dependently arisen, and whereas the mode of apprehension of ignorance is as if things are existing independently, not at all dependent on anything else. So we see that since everything lacks intrinsic reality, and yet things do exist, so we see that here then we conclude that all things, the mode of the arisal, is from arising from the ultimate reality, from the absence of intrinsic or the independent mode. So that perception or the consciousness which realizes the ultimate reality is in the most perfect state is called the truth body of the Buddha. And to achieve such a state of the truth body of the Buddha, having the capacity to understand everything, or having this quality of the omniscience, needs to be obtained by its respective courses, that is, which involves the element of accumulating merit for three countless lives. So this means you need to have tremendous determination, to willpower, to really undergo that amount of time to accumulate such a great, enormous amount of merit, and the accumulation of merit and accumulation of wisdom. So, and by the power of the bodhicitta, desire to achieve enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, if you can generate such a powerful motivation or such a powerful aspiration, then that could be the very powerful agent which can help one as you pursue through that amount of time, three countless eons, to accumulate that amount of the accumulations of the merit and wisdom to achieve that truth body of the Buddha. So, by way of dependence, by way of understanding the concept of dependent origination, so if you can really reflect on well, so we can then rightly come to the conclusion that the feasibility or the tenability of the existence of the four bodies of the Buddha. And whereas if you don't reflect on that, so that is your own fault. Otherwise, we can rightly posit the tenability or the existence of the possibility of the existence of the four truths, the four bodies of the Buddha. So the Buddha Shakyamuni, although we haven't seen him, nor have we heard him directly speaking, but when we reflect on, when we study his messages or the textual sources, and also the commentaries by the great Indian commentators like Nagarjuna and so forth, so we can see something very insightful in terms of the content matter of those literatures or the sources. So even the scientists and the contemporary scholars, when they probe through those literatures, they could see something very unique and something very powerful and insightful in these literatures. So it is not something, so say, to take a mundane example. So it is not possible that you can understand the other person so well simply by looking, having an appearance or the perception of that person. But to gain full understanding of that person, to understand the other person so well, you have to really try to be close with him for at least for a couple of days, and then see how he talks, how he behaves, and so forth. Only through that means, or we can explore, or we can discover what kind of person that he or she is. In a similar way, there are great amount of propounders of various faiths in this world, who, like the Buddhist Shakyamuni, propounded or founded their own religious faiths. But when we try to explore into, study what all these teachers taught, then we can make the distinction between the difference in what way the Buddhist Shakyamuni is something unique of all the other the preachers or the teachers. So it is not just sufficient to say that, oh, our Buddha or our preacher is something very unique, but we have to be able to respect the Buddha for his uniqueness by way of understanding the message that he gave. So that could then lead us to understand, to make the distinction between the different sources of refuge, the source of refuge in the Buddhist concept and the source of refuge in the non-Buddhist concepts. So the very distinctive aspects of Buddhism are the Bodhicitta and the wisdom. The Bodhicitta as the method, and the wisdom of emptiness as the wisdom. So, those qualities of Bodhicitta, motivated Bodhicitta, and then generating the other skillful means such as compassion, so forth, they comprise the accumulation of merit, and then the other aspect, understanding the dependent origination, through that getting insight into the subtlest concept of emptiness, comprise the accumulation of the merit, accumulation of wisdom, sorry. So the cultivation or meditation on Bodhicitta comprise the accumulation of the merit, and the reflection on the emptiness comprise the accumulation of wisdom. So these two are actually the crux or the essence of the practice, those great practitioners in the advanced Bodhisattva levels have undergone. So if we can really probe into, or if we really strive hard into the meditation on these two aspects, definitely we can see the possibility of transforming our mind and thereby gradually traverse through the paths of the Mahayana and then achieve the highest state of enlightenment, Buddhahood.